Golf Smarter number 132 for June 24, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Strategies from the range to the first tee to the final putt with Jan Vivestad.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading episode number 132 of the Golf Smarter podcast. At the end of today's show, we'll announce the winners of the Sorta Golf Creative Writing Contest and read the two, yes, two winning entries. Stay tuned for that. But I have to share an email that I received from Michael Hamill this week. Michael's a personal trainer in Calgary, Canada, and checks in with me on a regular basis with updates on his game, thoughts on recent episodes, and the lessons he's learned from our guests. This week, he sent me a link to euroclub.com. Now, there's no way I'm going to spend a full episode on this, but here's what I heard when I called their number.
Thank you for calling Euroclub, home of the Urinary Golf Club, the only club in your bag guaranteed to keep you out of the woods. Please hold while I transfer your call to a representative.
Enough said. Very funny, Michael. Thank you. Our guest today is the senior instructor at the Faldo Institute at the Rookery in Marco Island, Florida. Jan Vivestad is a PGA Class A member and has spent years teaching at some of the most prestigious clubs in the country. And my goal in this conversation was to have him provide us with different strategies for success, starting at the range, headed off to the first tee, onto the short game, and even more. I believe his experience with the Faldo Golf Institute and the years that he spent with the Marriott golf team makes him duly qualified to provide us with this data. Welcome, Jan.
Hello, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you this afternoon?
Fantastic.
Tell me about the facility that you have at Marco Island.
We have a beautiful resort here on Marco Island, Florida, which is in the southwestern portion of Florida. Newly renovated, went through a $200 million renovation.
Wow.
Right on the beach. Beautiful white sand beaches. Some of the nicest beaches in the country are located on the southwest side of Florida. We have a fantastic championship golf course here called the Rookery. It's located about 7 miles from the resort in Naples. And, of course, the home of the Faldo Golf School, which I am the senior instructor. And I'm real proud of the property here. We do a fantastic job with over 1,000 students annually.
Where exactly is Marco Island?
Actually, if you are looking at the map of Florida here, it's on that lower left-hand corner of the tip, directly across from Miami. So it's on the west coast. That the actually furthest southwest portion of Florida there, except for the Keys. So we're just above the Keys, about 60 miles.
Fabulous, fabulous. Do you have an opportunity or have you had opportunities to work with Nick Faldo in becoming an instructor for his program?
I have. I've been around Nick Faldo a considerable amount. When I started back in 99, you know, Nick still had a desire to play and compete. And he did, you know, travel and play out of Orlando, and I had quite a bit of interaction with him. He would, you know, play and practice and visit the Institute regularly. You know, all of his club fitting and such was done on site at our Orlando location. And, yeah, I did have an opportunity to build a relationship with him. Yes, sir.
It's interesting. You know, many players who achieve the level of success that he has aren't necessarily good instructors. I know that I've worked with people who have had a lot of success, but as far as being able to communicate as an instructor and be compassionate to the student who doesn't have those gifts that can get you to that level of success, how was it working with him?
Nick Faldo just has a wealth of information, you know, stored from all those years of competing and, you know, all those tournament conditions, playing all around the world, being exposed to all different types of competition, pressure situations. There's just a wealth of knowledge that goes along with, you know, playing golf at that premier level. And, you know, I feel like I was very fortunate to be around him, you know, during the latter part of his career. Really, he, you know, had a passion still to play golf in 99, 2000, 2001, and it was really interesting to just see the mindset of that type of player and that type of individual, and really how focused he was and really needed to be to really stay at the level where he was still competitive.
And what is it about the Faldo Golf Institute that sets it apart from so many other golf schools?
I believe that the training program that we go through, I think, sets us apart from a lot of the other academies out there. Not to say that there aren't academies that also are very good, but I think, you know, we do have PGA Class A members. We do have a certification program that we put all our instructors through. So we do have a substantial training, a recognized program, you know, with the PGA of America that we put all of our instructors through. So this is very helpful in terms of, creating consistency in terms of kind of how everything is approached.
Interesting. Well, I want to talk about strategy in our conversation. And I think I'd like to start, I want to break it up in three different ways. I want to talk about strategy on the practice range, strategy before a round, and then strategy during your round. So let's start with strategy on the range. What kind of advice and tips can you provide for us?
Well, in terms of a strategy, I think the first thing that you have to understand when you develop a particular approach or a program approach is you have to kind of have a good understanding of strengths and weaknesses. So I think looking under the hood, so to speak, and really digging deep and seeing what are the things that you do well, and perhaps, you know, putting on that pro column and then the con column there, you know, what are the things that you would like to see someone do better? I mean, a lot of times through an interview with a student, I mean, a lot of these things sometimes come out here right in the early stages as a coach and someone that's looking to improve and develop. So, you know, typically I think that's the first thing that I look at. And then, you know, from there, a program approach would kind of work itself around, you know, a well-rounded program, so to speak, of all the things that you would want to accomplish. In other words, you know, maybe you're working on some things there, some putting exercises and drills to create and cultivate better speed control or distance control. So, you know, there's certain things that you have to kind of know, I think, you know, through experience with that person or interviewing that person, that really kind of sets everything in motion when it comes to practice and a strategy.
Okay, now let's step back from being the instructor or working with students right now, but if you had an opportunity to give, well, start with me. Give me some advice on what my strategies should be out on the driving range, saying that, you know, lately I've been having a lot of trouble within 100 yards?
Well, I think, you know, the essence of short game, as Nick Faldo would tell you, really is an ability to turn three strokes to two. So, you know, ultimately, if there were shots there inside of 100 yards, you know, you're having some difficulty with those particular distances. I think the first thing would be to, you know, look at the technique and try to find out if there's any flaws to that. I mean, I think that's the first thing that I always look at. Now, that would include, you know, all those fundamental things that we need to ensure: setup, position, you know, making sure that your posture, your ball placement, your grip, you know, all these things there, the weight distribution, balance. I mean, all these things need to be tended to in order to give you the best opportunity to repeat and create a consistent movement. So, I mean, I think that's the first kind of step that you would look at. Now, when you are out on the practice area there, I think it's also very important in order to be able to work on those strength areas as well as the weaknesses. So, you know, that might mean when you're 40 or 50 yards away from the hole, you're much more comfortable than perhaps when you're 25 yards away. And, you know, that might entail, you know, understanding that putting more time in to be able to, you know, work on improving that particular distance there, that 25-yard shot, through rehearsal and practice, you know, it's all of a sudden you could start to get a little bit more consistency in terms of execution. So, you know, there's a lot of things there, I guess, in terms of, you know, strategies that you could consider in a practice program, but I think that would be a good start.
Interesting. Do you see a common problem that most amateurs have, or what do you witness as being the most common problem that you'd love to just grab them and say, wait a minute, let me help you here for just a second, you know, out on the range or something?
I don't know if you could really group it into a very common problem. I think, you know, a lot of higher handicapper, recreational type of golfers do certainly, you know, have particular swing tendencies that sometimes make it a little bit more difficult when they do approach some of those pitch distances, those, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60-yard shots. You know, perhaps it could be the plane that they swing the golf club on. Certainly, you know, most people that slice the ball come down on a more vertical or steeper plane. So sometimes just maybe even just, you know, having a look on video sometimes can really be helpful in terms of being able to strengthen someone's understanding of a particular tendency and really kind of start them on their way to improvement there, start them, you know, understanding kind of what's going on and being able to apply some practice to that particular tendency there and start improving that way.
I seem to have more trouble from 60 yards to 20 yards in than I do with 110 to 60 yards. Seems like the closer I get, the more trouble, or I guess the lesser amount of confidence that I have on the shot. I guess it's maybe partly because, you know, you're so close, you're overthinking it that you could get yourself into bigger trouble. Is that a common thing that you've seen as well?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, being able to apply a particular swing length to the distance that you're facing, I think, is something that a lot of amateur golfers do struggle with, and that would be, you know, taking the club back, perhaps, you know, halfway back, maybe hip high with your hand position. I mean, that type of swing length going back, we often refer to by using a clock face approach. So if I took the hands back to about hip high, I would consider that a 9 o'clock swing. Now, that would involve some wrist hinge. So if I took it back to that position and brought it through, accelerated the club through, I would look for an equal distance on the other side there. So if I took it to 9 o'clock, I'd like to bring it through to 3 o'clock. And that would establish a particular distance or speed that the club is traveling at. So a lot of golfers, I think, when they take the club back, they don't really attach a particular position, whether it be because they don't practice this or they, you know, maybe they're not aware of where they are, but a lot of times being able to regulate the backswing length is something that's more difficult, and that's why you would tend to see a little bit more inconsistency in that shorter range of shot there. It also incorporate really an ability to execute this shot would incorporate an ability to keep the club on a good plane, on a good angle. And I think, you know, if you do, technically speaking, if you get a little off out of plane there, you have some tendencies in your full swing, sometimes they make it more difficult. They find themselves in a difficult position to change direction halfway back. So it is, I think a lot of times, technique certainly can influence one's ability to control that shorter distance pitch there. So I think that's probably one of the reasons.
Interesting, because I think that I've noticed myself when I have to do what you were describing as a 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock, and basically just changing my swing from what I'm most comfortable with, a full swing, that I would tend to, A, speed up, and B, tense up.
I think you're right. I mean, I think absolutely the tempo at which you move the club at and developing a repeatable rhythm is going to be extremely important in being able to control distance. So, you know, when you're in that scoring position, you know, you have to kind of attach all those things in your mind, that visual image, painting a picture in your mind, you know, drawing on a past experience. These are the things that you rely upon in order to be able to take that to the golf course. And I think when you do these things in practice, you know, when you have that type of strategy, it certainly makes it much easier to execute when you're on the golf course. You know, I mean, it's something as simple as really just, you know, adjusting or changing the lies, evaluating the lies that you have there, you know, looking at different slope conditions, you know, uphill, downhill, side hill. When you practice, there's certainly wind that could influence these shots here. Obviously, there's so many possibilities, elevational change there, flag location. Think about how many difficult positions or easy positions or, you know, along with course knowledge. These are all things that are very important to consider when you're visualizing or imaging that shot in your mind there. So I always think making a rehearsal swing there, trying to work on cultivating a feel for a particular shot there when you practice, I think is certainly as important in a practice session as it would be when you're playing and you're grinding it out on the golf course. You're working on your routine and going through those things.
So not necessarily when you're out on the practice range, picking a flag and shooting at the flag each time, but picking different locations and different angles around the range would probably be more advantageous for you in the long run, huh?
I think so. We have a very unique area here at our location. It's called the Scoring V. It was an area that was designed around Nick Faldo himself and kind of really how he liked to prepare for major championships, working on distance control. And basically what it looks like is it's a Christmas tree type of approach. You're on a tee area and you look out and there's flags that range in distance from 40 to 80 yards. So 40, 50, 60, 70, and 80 yards are all 10-yard increments. It's shaped in the form of a Christmas tree. So it's wide, maybe 50 yards apart on the right and the left at that 50-yard distance, and then they start getting more narrow when you get to 60 and 70. And they're actually, it's kind of a neat place to work on getting a feel for being on the golf course, really, which I think is real important practice, a target-based approach to your practice and strategy.
Oh, I think that's a really great idea. So you have, like at 40 yards out and 50 yards apart, you have flags, and then at, 50 yards out, they're more like 40 yards apart, and they just build into a pyramid shape?
Exactly right.
Wow,
yeah, it's a triangle
a
type
idea.
Approach, and it's an actual green. They're actually green, so
okay.
You have little targets, and it's really a neat place. I think the students really enjoy spending time on this, as well as, really this 100-yard in shot is definitely one of the most important shots in golf, if not the most important in terms of scoring, so... Yeah, we do spend a tremendous amount of time at developing those skills.
I've never seen that. I think that's such a great idea. Let's transition now to strategy on your warm-up practice before a round. I mean, the time that you get to spend out on the range before you're about to play.
Sure. When you go into a warm-up type of practice, I think that the one thing that I would like to tell the people that are going to view this is really... a warm-up is exactly that. It's not, you're not on the golf course. You're not necessarily really focused in on trying to hit exactly right at the flag. It's a way of loosening up. It's a way of establishing and creating good rhythm for the day, being true to the tempo at which you've been practicing. So, in terms of warm-up, I think it's great to kind of go through all the wedges there, speaking of 100 yards and in, and maybe just hit some balls out there at your go-to distance. So for me, that distance is typically 50, 70, and 100 yards. Those are the three distances that I really like to practice before going out and playing a tournament round. So I would go out there, and I have those particular wedges that I use to achieve those distances there. So a lot of times I'll hit, 7, 8, 10 balls and just honing that skill, making sure that I'm feeling that particular position and swing length and really developing on the rhythm for the day. It's a good way to kind of get you started and get you to really cultivate that feel for the day.
And do you spend much time with your longer irons and your driver and your woods or hybrids?
Certainly. I think, as whenever I start my warm-up practice, generally speaking, what I'll do is I usually arrive at the golf course probably maybe a little bit before an hour before my tee time, sometimes even a little bit earlier than that. Generally, I like to go do some free putting. I'll just go out and try to get a feel for the condition there. I think it's always good to get on the green there early and kind of get a sense for the texture of the green and, the green speeds that you're going to be facing there. I'll hit a few chips around the green. It's often a good way to kind of understand a little bit of how that ball is going to react when it hits some of those greens out there when I'm practicing. And then, as I work over to the range there, I do often do some of my short iron practice to warm myself up there, so something less than full swing. And then typically, for me, myself, I like to hit the even-numbered clubs, the iron. So I do start with wedge, hit 5, 6 balls toward a particular direction and target, and then work into the 8, do the same, 6, 4, 2, And then, of course, you know, three woods and drivers. And then I usually typically go back again to a shorter club like a wedge, sand wedge, to just, again, just to get a feel for that particular go-to distance there. For me, again, it's 70 and 100 yards with my sand wedge.
And if something's not working for you that day, do you focus on it? Do you get nervous about it? Or are there days where you're just like, you know, I'm just going to try to avoid this shot?
Well, I think in terms of, you know, I mean, everybody that's played this game could certainly understand that it certainly comes and goes. It's hard to kind of put a finger on exactly, you know, where it goes sometimes. But I think, you know, sometimes when you're not maybe hitting it, you know, real well on the range prior to the round, I think you have to kind of just look at, you know, some other ways to get it around sometimes. So sometimes if you're not hitting it well, it's a real rewarding type of feel to go out there and post a good score, knowing that, you know, I didn't have my best, but, you know, I'm going to hang in there. And it's really a true test for a good player. And a good player, you know, is able to get that ball around even though they might not be hitting at their best. I think that's a real good way of, you know, assessing how good a player really is. Because, I mean, I think a good player, you know, typically speaking there, can find a way around even when they're not hitting it well. So, yeah, I don't really concentrate.
But what about the rest of us?
Yeah, I wouldn't really, you know, when you're out there on the range and things aren't going your way, I mean, give yourself a chance. You might be surprised. I mean, I can remember many times where I, you know, kind of started warming up and didn't hit it exactly like I'd like to, but, you know, went out there and played pretty well. So it's hard to put a real finger on that, but it's important. I think it's an important thing. I don't think, because if you're hitting it on the range poorly, not to warm up, it's important to get your body ready for the day and establish some good rhythm. And, you know, don't put a lot of a merit on whether you're hitting every shot flush or so.
And so often I receive emails, and I'm sure that you hear this as well, that taking it from the practice range to the tee box doesn't always translate.
Well, I've been teaching for almost 20 years now. I would tell you, you know, I've certainly, you know, psychologically, you know, when you look at so many different players there are some people that unfortunately they kind of get caught up in kind of the mechanics, so to speak, of the swing, and it makes it a little bit more difficult sometimes when they get out on the golf course to perform kind of a range specialist, so to speak. But you really just have to rely upon understanding those things that you want to work on, but when you get out on the golf course, really focusing in on the more important things, which is the visualization, you know, being able to work through and be ruthless in terms of your routine and be able to really, really work hard at all those pre-swing things that you're going through, that the thought process, really going through and creating and developing that strategy for that particular hole, you know, with emphasis on, you know, working that from the hole back to the tee area. So, I mean, all these things that you go through when you're out there on the practice range, I think it's important to consider when, you know, when you're out there and doing that. I mean, you have to be able to take that from the practice range to the golf course. And sometimes people have difficulty in doing that. But I think, you know, some of the things there that I mentioned, you know, routine, I think, is extremely important. You know, understanding the basics behind, you know, working yourself around your club face, you know, the alignment principles there, aligning yourself parallel. I mean, these are all things that I think if you looked at, you know, 49 of the top 50 players on the men and the women's tour, you probably see a lot of similarities in terms of kind of how they approach each shot and how they, you know, the mannerisms that attach themselves to them and working them into that position.
Do you have any tips or advice for us on how to keep us from, once things start to collapse out on the course or things don't, or the shot doesn't go the way you want, from preventing yourself from overanalyzing it or putting too much into it and not going back to what you're most comfortable with and starting to tinker with everything? I would think that becomes, I know personally, that becomes a big problem as I'm starting to tinker with, oh, that didn't happen. Oh, it didn't happen again. So now I start, you know, on the course, I'm starting to tinker and fiddle and fitch and do things that are just not helpful. Doesn't make it easier.
You know, unfortunately, this is a, you know, the game itself, right? And the way that you approach the game is, it is imperfect in terms of kind of, you know, being able to, you know, hit every shot the way you want to. But I think that's the allure, really, of golf. And really, again, you know, when you have a situation or a shot there that doesn't go off as planned, I mean, you have to kind of, you obviously stay in the present, you know, be able to look at the shot that you have at hand there and be able to really just focus in on readjusting the plan. So, you know, the strategy in terms of, you know, how to evaluate what's happening there, I think it's really meant for afterward on the driving range. I mean, I think technically speaking, you know, if you do have some things that are occurring, it's always, you know, my advice to, that this game is much too difficult for you to try to break it down and put it back together in the middle of a round. So you kind of just need to take a deep breath, you know, kind of maybe walk to the side a little bit with a club, make a few practice swings, you know, find some high grass, some high rough, just make a few swings, and try to go back to the things that are really important, which is, you know, swinging the club at a good pace, you know, being true to your rhythm, the tempo that you're creating. I mean, if you look at a lot of the great players over the history of the game, you can go back and you can really describe the rhythm that they swung the club at. And I think that's really important for the average player to understand that the Sam Sneeds, the Ben Hogans, I mean, they were very, very true to the pace at which they moved the club. And I think a lot of times when people get a little out of sync, more often than not, you can look in this area here, because more often than not, it has to do with just maybe perhaps trying to hit the ball a little too hard for the men. You know, sometimes just a little out of sync, perhaps, with the arms and body. There's a number of things that could be in there, but I would just kind of get the pace there.
Well, Jan, we appreciate the time that you've spent with us, and these are valuable, very valuable tips. I appreciate this very much.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Yeah, just everyone, just I'd love to just have you come down here and visit us here in Naples. It's a beautiful place. We consider this paradise. And when you're out there on the range, just, you know, commit to every shot. Do your best on every shot, and I'm sure that your viewing audience will continue to improve.
Yeah, I'm just curious. How many fingers am I holding up?
Let's say, how about one?
Okay, so it's not a viewing audience, it is audio. I just wanted to make sure that you couldn't see, that you've referred to this a couple times. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing something here. So the Faldo Golf Institute at Marriott Resorts, you can check them out at gofaldo.com or call them at 888-GO-FALDO.
Dave and Jim there, they'll be more than happy to get right back with you. Two fantastic guys. Know them both real well. They run our call center, and two just quality gentlemen. And they'll do everything in their power to make sure that your stay with us is fantastic.
You've heard it here first. Jan Vivestad, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Fred. Thank you.
There's just a few more days to enter and win a custom wedge from Eidolon Golf. Deadline for entries is Friday, June 27th, 2008. Make sure you tune in to hear the winner, because we'll also have a special announcement from the wedge guy, Terry Kaler. To register, go to golfsmarter.com and click on the tab labeled Contest. Fill out your information and the verification code, and good luck. Now it's time to announce the winning entries for the prize package from Sorta Golf. If you remember, Sorta Golf, or the 7 Original Rules of True and Ancient Golf, is a suggested change by Don Glenn, the commissioner of the SGA, the Sorta Golf Association. He believes these rules would enhance the pace of play, create different guidelines for tournament play, and make the game a bit more fun for many, many people. Frankly, by my own experience and the email essays that we've received, it seems that agreeing to these rules before you tee off eliminates a lot of tension and pressure during your round. Our winners will each receive a free copy of the book, The Muldooney Revisions, which is available on the Smarter Shopping page of golfsmarter.com, a 6-pack of Sorta Golf balls, and a limited edition Sorta Golf bag tag with the Golfer's Bill of Rights. Quickly, here are those 7 Bill of Rights again. Take it however you'd like. Number 1, improve your lie. Number 2, inside the leather is good. Number 3, double bogey max. It's my least favorite. Number 4, one in, one out principle. Basically, all OB plays like a lateral. Number 5, any ball found is yours. Number 6, all equipment is conforming. And number 7, one mulligan per round. Now, if you check back on the Golf Smarter blog tomorrow, Wednesday, June 25th, we'll list a whole bunch of the entries that came in, because people had some really interesting comments about what they thought about these sort of golf rules. Now, our first winner is from Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, and Stuart Margolis writes, played one of my freest and most enjoyable rounds of golf yesterday after listening to the podcast on Sorta Golf. My friend and I played, adhering strictly to the 7 rules, and it opened up a whole new world for me. The real golfer in me, the one that was unencumbered, came out. For the most part, I played without a lot of the fear I usually play with. Long live the 7 rules. Golf is enjoyable once again. Thank you for freeing me from jail. And now, with a little help from Glenn Miller, and I'm going to expose myself. It's probably the first time that I've sung in public since I was about 14, so you got to excuse me on this, but hey, I'm here to have fun. This is an entry from Paul Tarvitus in Toronto, Canada. Paul, cue the music. May all those moldy rules be gone. They just stifle our favorite game. Let's play some golf and have some fun, sort of like the SGA. Gimme Mulligan or gimme death. Improve each of my lies. All 2-foot putts are good enough. Sorta golf, play free or die. If you have any quotes, comments, questions, or extra verses, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
The Good Dog Podcast is for people who are passionate about dogs.
I love my dogs.
I interview veterinarians, dog behaviorists, and a whole range of experts who offer tips and insights.
A good German Shepherd makes decisions. It will say, well, you know, I know the light just changed, but on the other hand, there's a very quiet Prius coming your way, and so I'm going to stop. Whereas labs have a tendency to just follow rules.
You'll hear about some amazing canines who help their owners to be safe, and in some cases, alive.
Sometimes diabetics will test and they'll still be at 100 saying, I'm not going low, what are you talking about? And the dogs let them know before they even feel it.
And you'll pick up ideas for solving a host of challenges.
Within a week, you're going to have a dog that is calm, he lies down quietly, he's just going to be a totally different dog.
I'm Joanne Green. Please subscribe to the Good Dog Podcast, found in iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.